Chapter 28. Adamantua. A blast of stunning sound and pressure swept across the stockade. The force shredded parts of the fabricated structure and spilled over many of the stone blocks and boulders that Algerine survivors had expertly stacked into protective walls. It was an overpressure burst, the sort of concussion that might have accompanied a multi-megaton detonation on a neighboring landmass. The wall of the blast traveled through the anguished atmosphere of Adamantua like a sonic tidal wave, crossing continents, swirling seas, lifting soil, stripping vegetation, and leveling forests. It was accompanied by the longest, loudest noise burst of all, a burst that every living thing on Adamantua could feel in its guts and in its diaphragm. It shook internal organs, even those encased in the transhumanly reinforced and plate-armored bodies of the Adeptus Astartes. It made eardrums burst and noses bleed. It burrowed into brains like iron spikes. In the blister nest chamber, the tech adept had risen triumphantly to his feet, the jack cable straining at his sockets, his arms outstretched as he howled the words aloud,
"I am Slaughter! I am Slaughter!"
The Magus biologist's makeshift apparatus was beginning to malfunction. Connections were shorting out, and monitor screens were rolling, blanking, or dissolving into squares of hissing, white noise. Laurentius and Nyman had fallen, clutching their ears in agony. The ground shook. The walls reverberated and cracked at the huge atmospheric disturbance passing over the stockade. Fragments of the blister nest material, translucent and grey, dropped out of the deforming walls and the curve of the fracturing ceiling. Daylight and Slaughter began to move up the tunnel to the surface to learn the nature of the crisis, but the rushing, concussive force of the wind drove them back. Then the wind and the noise were gone. Abruptly gone, and the vibration began to ease. The tech adept stopped speaking forever and collapsed, snapping out the last of his plugs with the slack motion of his body. Daylight and Slaughter rushed to the surface, their steel-cased boots thundering along the Xenos-woven flooring. Threads of vapor hung in a twilight world. The stockade was ruined. The brothers on the surface had been more grievously mauled by the overpressure than those, like Daylight and Slaughter, who had benefited from the comparative shelter of the nest tunnels. The sky was a sickly, blotchy color, like bruised flesh. All cloud cover seemed to have disappeared, and the wind had dropped. It was hard to think where all the clouds could have gone to. There was an odd, loud buzzing sound in the air, and a thin, pitiless rain fell straight down, hard and cold. The moon hung above them, filling the sky. It was vast and black. It seemed so close that it must be resting on the rim of Adamantua, propped up on the planet's mountain peaks. That was just an illusion, of course, but no heavenly body could ever be so close to another without some form of technical suspension or energetic holding field far beyond the capabilities of imperial humanity. Daylight and Slaughter could see the surface of the moon, gnarled and interwoven, a vast pattern of fused wreckage and interconnected metal plates. It looked like a giant clockwork mechanism, half rusted, or some intricate toy planet whose brightly painted cover had been removed to expose the inner workings. Daylight saw the ships, tiny by comparison, that flooded out of the moon's interior into the sky. They looked like insects swarming in their masses coming out of their colony mound on the one hot day of the year to take wing and migrate. Thousands. There were thousands of them. They were too far away to identify with any confidence, but Daylight had enough of a grasp of comparative scale to know that some of them were smaller atmospheric aircraft and some were vast void-capable warships. They were seeing an attack formation, a multi-strand attack designed to hit surface and near-space targets simultaneously. A rapid deployment raid of huge magnitude, an attack on a planetary level, an invasion force. Daylight heard the whistle of high-altitude munitions augering in. The first blasts ripped through the hills above the stockade, turning them into steam and light. Monumental cannons, vast missile arrays, and planet-slicing beam weapons were being fired at the surface from the invading moon and the fleets of attack ships it was disgorging. Bombs rained down, chewing their way across the valley in mushrooms of smoke, or hurling water from the lake in towering columns. Stabbing beams of light raked in from high above, vaporizing ground targets and scoring deep canyons of blackened, fused glass in the rock.
"Rally! Rally!"
Daylight yelled. He couldn't see First Captain Algernon anywhere, but what little force the Imperial fists had left needed to be focused and directed. Projectiles smashed into the countryside around them like meteors. They fell like giant bombs, but they didn't detonate on impact. Thunderclap concussions blasted out from each strike.
"Landers! Troop landers!"
Slaughter cried. Daylight didn't argue. The enemy, this brand new enemy, was deploying in unimaginable strength. Daylight saw the first of them appear, flooding from the impact crater of one of their lander projectiles. Smoke washed the air, but he could see their ground forces distinctly. He could see what kind of creatures they were. The face of the enemy revealed at last. It either made no sense, or it made the worst sense of all. Daylight knew this enemy. Every brother of the Shield Corps knew this enemy. Warriors of the Adeptus Astartes might almost regard such a foe contemptuously due to overfamiliarity, except this particular foe never operated in this particular manner. It simply didn't. It couldn't. There was no more time for questions. The roaring enemy was upon them, and all that remained was war. Daylight drew his sword.
"Daylight Wall stands forever," he voxed. "No wall stands against it. Bring them down."